Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, joined by Wes Hodkiewicz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, an entire Sunday of some pretty exciting NFL action to talk about that does not involve the Packers, but some results that certainly impact the Packers. And it starts right with the game. You called it our final show last week. You said the Minnesota Vikings would take their first loss at Philadelphia, and sure enough, the Eagles get the win. The Vikings are 5-1, and now the Packers are only one game out of first place.
Yeah, Mike, I don't want to brag at all. I mean, I've been known to make a few predictions from time to time, and be able to come out on the positive end of it. But I'll say this: the one thing I definitely was surprised by was the formula that the Philadelphia Eagles used to win this game, and I think we saw bits and pieces of it when the Packers played them at US Bank Stadium, but you saw just an absolute attack from that defense of Jim Schwartz and the Philadelphia Eagles, being able to sack Bradford six times. On the telecast, they said he was hit, I think, 19. They were only credited for 12, but that's still quite a bit after the quarterback.
Yeah, that's a lot of hits. And if there's a formula, it would seem to be to get a lead on Minnesota, which is not easy to do against that defense. But the Eagles got a kickoff return for a touchdown. That was big. They were able to put together a touchdown drive in the second half. And then it's get after the quarterback while Minnesota is playing from behind, because for as solid as Minnesota is, and they are still a good team despite, I'm sure, what to them is a frustrating loss from Sunday, if they have a weak link or a weakness on their team, it's their offensive line. We talked about that after the Week 2 game, yeah, when they beat the Packers by 3 points, and we felt that the Packers' defensive front was really doing the job and controlling the game, and the Packers came up a little bit short for a number of reasons. But boy, that Philadelphia pass rush just completely dominated the second half of that football game.
Yeah, and Sam Bradford, going back to that Week 2 game, he made some spectacular throws, yep, in that contest against the Packers. Some really top-of-the-line elite quarterback play. He came down to earth a little bit in this game against Philadelphia, and what was probably the biggest surprise, I think Mike Zimmer addressed it during his post-game news conference, the fact that I believe they forced 4 turnovers in that game. They think that that's going to be enough to get them the win. Unfortunately, it was 4 turnovers on the other side of it, too. So yep, to have that kind of game play out, Carson Wentz, 52.4 passer rating, just amazing, kind of the course of events in which unfolded. But at the end of the day, as you alluded to, Philadelphia's defense made more plays and were able to get after Bradford, and I thought that was really the biggest key to this win.
Yeah, for sure. And if you also look elsewhere in the NFC North, you had the Detroit Lions pull off another exciting last-second comeback. They knock off the Washington Redskins at Ford Field. The Redskins score a go-ahead touchdown with just over a minute to go, and Matthew Stafford takes the Lions back the other way in the final minute, hits a touchdown pass to Anquan Boldin on 3rd and 10 in the final, I believe, 25 seconds of the game, something
seconds,
like
yeah,
that. And suddenly the Detroit Lions, as we talked about, you know, kind of left Soldier Field a few weeks ago with their tail between their legs. They were 1-3, lost to the Bears, Chicago's only win of the season. But Detroit comes home for a 3-game homestand against the Eagles, the Rams, and the Redskins, all teams above 500 at the time they play them. And the Lions get all 3 victories, and suddenly they're 4-3. Right on the Packers' heels at 4-2, with the Vikings at 5-1. This is a, without question, it's a 3-team race in the NFC North again.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, man. I mean, when you look at the Lions, when they're hot, they're hot. And, you know, they had to work through some things earlier this season. I know people were questioning Jim Caldwell and the entire process, and maybe the effect had worn off with Jim Bob Cooter as the offensive coordinator, and the offense was coming back down to life. Well, suddenly they find it again, and certainly when you look at, you know, their defense, they make it work. They have the pieces there to be able to win these type of games. But offensively, the way that they have kind of replicated the production of Calvin Johnson, when you talk about Anquan Boldin and his veteran experience, Marvin Jones Jr., I think it has to be up there as one of the top free agent signings this entire season, this past offseason. And then now even Justin Forsett leads them in rushing. I know it was only a modest 33 yards on 8 carries, but still, they're finding ways to get production, and, yep, and now they're right back in the thick of things.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing about Detroit's victory on Sunday was defensively. That was a hot Redskins team that had won four in a row. Kirk Cousins was a hot hand throwing the ball, and Cousins actually had a really good game statistically. Yeah. I believe he was 30 out of 39, something like that. Right. But at the end of the day, only 17 points, and the Lions had just enough there on the final drive to steal a victory, in a sense, from Washington and snap the Redskins' winning streak. This is really something now. We mentioned where these three teams are in the NFC North. The NFC East, and these are the two divisions playing each other all season long, all four teams in the NFC East now above 500.
Yeah.
Giants are 4-3, Redskins are 4-3, Cowboys obviously 5-1, they had a bye, and the Eagles now 4-2 after their victory over Minnesota.
Yeah, and you know, so much noise is around Ben McAdoo and the Giants and what's, you know, their offense, but they still are finding ways to win these games. It's so understated. I mean, everybody wants to focus on certain things about either, you know, McAdoo's coaching style or his appearance. They're 4-3.
And they're the only team to beat the Cowboys this year. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, they're the only team that's figured out a formula to beat the Cowboys. So it's turned into a really exciting division, and certainly when we're going to see a big part of it here in this November, you know, kind of schedule coming up here when they get Washington and Philadelphia back-to-back. But right now, with where they're at and where the NFC North is at, it's kind of where the power lies right now in the NFC and people trying to sort of get out there and grab control of this thing.
Yeah, I think so. Well, plenty more to talk about on a Sunday of NFL action, including the Packers' next opponent, the Atlanta Falcons. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, and Wes, Packers' next opponent, the Atlanta Falcons. A couple of weeks ago, they looked like the hottest team in all of football with four straight victories, and now suddenly they've lost back-to-back heartbreakers, lost by 2 points up in Seattle when they thought they had a pass interference or should have had a pass interference call at the end that might have put them in field goal range for a shot to win that game. Then yesterday, they're at home against San Diego. They blow a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter and end up losing in overtime 33-30. So now the Atlanta Falcons are 4-3 and trying to hang on to things on top of the NFC South.
Yeah, and they're going to be hearing about it probably this entire week in terms of last year and the start they got off to.
Right.
You know, now once again sort of trailing off after that first month of the season. Still a very explosive offense, but as we found out last year when the Packers took on the San Diego Chargers, this is not a team you want to mess with. Phillip Rivers can throw with anybody in the NFL. He can get that offense moving no matter what. And this is one of those situations where the Falcons, they got off to a fast start, left a little bit too much room there for them in the second half, and then certainly you get to the overtime and the decisions that were made there that'll linger for the entire week. But bigger picture, this is a team now that suddenly is at sort of a crossroads. They were one of the fastest starting teams in the league this season.
Yep.
Now they're 4-3, and they're taking on a pretty darn good Packers team at their own home field this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, certainly some vulnerabilities, I think, that the Chargers and some other teams have probed and exposed on the Falcons' defense. Atlanta was winning this game 27-10 late in the second quarter. Their offense only scored 3 points the rest of the way, which I'm sure is a sore spot. But to be up 17 points at home and let that one get away, and on top of that, a controversial or questionable, you might say, decision by Falcons head coach Dan Quinn in overtime. I'm interested in your thoughts on this. The Falcons win the toss and get the ball first in overtime. Obviously, you need a touchdown in order to end the game on the first possession. They face 4th-and-1 on their own 45-yard line. And he decides to go for it. They get stopped. The Chargers then just really need one first down going the other way, which they get and kick a field goal and beat him. And you know, a gutsy call that didn't work out, but one that Quinn and a lot of the Falcons fans are going to disagree about here for a while.
Yeah, and it's, you like the aggressiveness in terms of being able to, you have an idea of what you want to accomplish there. And if you're decisive about it, I get the call. you have to be real, though, too, and admit that it's also probably reflects how you feel your defense is doing against Atlanta's, or I should say the Chargers' offense.
Yeah, the defense had just given up two late drives in the fourth quarter for a touchdown and a field goal. So from that standpoint, although Quinn said after the game that had nothing to do with it. But you have to believe it had something to do with it.
It has to. And obviously you don't want to throw your defense under the bus, but otherwise that line of thinking doesn't make any sense. Because if you have confidence in your defense to stop them, you can get the field position battle back, maybe end up getting the ball right where you were to begin with. So this is an interesting decision and one that I'm sure will be talked about for a while. But you have a chance. I mean, they talk about playing to win or playing to lose. I mean, they certainly were playing to win there. But it didn't work out. I got to give credit to the Chargers, too. I thought they had a tremendous halftime adjustment. When you look at Julio Jones, 9 catches, 174 yards, looks like another big day. They actually matched in the second half Casey Hayward, the former Packers cornerback, against him largely, and that went a long way. He still had some production, but it went a long way in being able to limit those big plays. And certainly when you look at this game, thought that was one of the underlying sort of factors in San Diego being able to come back and pull this out.
Yeah, and the new overtime rules also play an interesting factor in this decision by Quinn. I mean, personally, I disagree with the decision to go for it in your own territory there on fourth and one, because even if you pick that up, you drive for one or two more first downs and kick a field goal, the game is not over.
Right.
You have to score a touchdown to end that game on the first possession. So why are you risking it when you're only going to allow your defense 10 yards, essentially, a field to defend, or you lose the game on a field goal the other way? The way the new overtime rules are structured, I think the play is to punt the ball, put them back on the 20, maybe the 15 or the 10 if you get a good punt there. But again, if Dan Quinn doesn't feel very good about his defense, he feels like he's got to keep the ball in the hands of his offense in order to win the game. So a lot went into that. But now a Falcons team that is suddenly on a two-game losing streak with the Packers coming to town on a little bit of extra rest.
Yeah, definitely. And think about this, too. I mean, when Quinn makes that decision to go for it, his offense had scored all of 3 points in the second half.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was just this juggernaut that was moving the ball, too. And, well, we want to score force and get out of here. No, it didn't work like that. I mean, as you said, I mean, even if they do get into scoring territory and the drive stalls, then you're kicking the field goal and that same defense or that same offense that you're worried about defending has a chance to win it. So certainly something they'll be talking about for a while, but now they have another chance to see if they can change their fortunes against Green Bay.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll be talking about this Packers-Falcons matchup all week long here on Packers Unscripted. Back with more right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford along here with Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, you mentioned Julio Jones in the last segment. We might as well dive right into that. That's going to be one of the biggest storylines of the week here leading up to Packers-Falcons on Sunday at the Georgia Dome. 9 catches for 174 yards, but you talked about the Chargers making a switch there. They put Casey Hayward on him in the second half. And really until the final drive of the fourth quarter, when the Falcons got in position for a 58-yard field goal to try to win, which came up a little bit short, Jones had 2 catches for 35 yards on that drive. But for the bulk of the second half, just 2 receptions after a 100-yard first half. Chargers really did the job there. And, you know, when you look at the numbers, it goes to show that if you can somehow contain Julio Jones, you have to feel good about your chances of containing that offense.
Yeah, I think one of the things that people have sort of talked about this year, and I haven't been able to watch the Falcons much other than a little, you know, the game yesterday. But the thing that's interesting is there's been some, the sort of over the years where Matt Ryan will kind of get fixated on Jones a little bit. I saw a couple things yesterday, you know, where they had maybe Sanu open for some plays. He wasn't looking his way. He was looking, you know, for his receiver in number 11. So this is one of those situations where if you can limit him, if you could find ways to take him away, that is really the biggest part of this offense. And certainly many times we're talking about stopping the run, and there's a lot of guys with, you know, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman that you're going to have to worry about. But this particular case, it starts with Julio Jones, because if you look at, you know, sometimes where they've been successful, he's had an interesting year, 40 catches, 830 yards, 4 touchdowns. But 2 of those games he was held to 2 or fewer catches and 30 or fewer yards.
Yeah.
Just a really unique season that he's had, and certainly has been the catalyst for this offense.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most explosive players in the league, there's no question about it, and certainly Packers fans aren't going to forget his last appearance against Green Bay here at Lambeau Field. I believe it was a Monday night game in 2014. 259 yards. Practically single-handedly brought the Falcons back from a tremendous deficit in the second half, and then the Packers were able to hang on for, I believe it was a 43-37 victory when Green Bay had a huge lead. Julio Jones certainly showing what he could do there, and it's going to be a handful for the Packers, let's face it, and we don't know the injury situation for Green Bay, what it will be like by the end of this week. Will Demaryius Randall and or Quentin Rollins be back in the lineup? Will they not? Will the Packers, if the Packers are where they are right now, you have to believe that Ladarius Gunter, the biggest, most physical cornerback that the Packers currently have, is the guy who will be matched up on Julio Jones with some safety help over the top. You're not going to leave Gunter out there one-on-one on Julio. But by the same token, we'll see what the health situation is for Green Bay as the week progresses.
Yeah, right, Mike. And this is one of these things, too. I thought, and we discussed it last week after the game, what a tremendous performance by Gunter in terms of really putting that showing against the Cowboys in the rearview mirror, resetting very quickly when you know you're not going to have Randall, when you know you're not going to have Rollins, and being able to flip the page. And I thought the Packers being able to hold them, I think it was, 140 passing yards in that game is what Chicago finished up with. Being able to contain them like that, now Green Bay, I think, they've kind of etched towards the top 10 now in passing off or passing defense.
Okay.
That's pretty impressive when you consider some of the issues they had earlier this season and in some of the areas they needed to correct.
Yeah, with where the injuries are in that cornerback group, which is probably the deepest position, certainly the secondary as a whole, the deepest position on the defensive side of the ball. That depth has been tested, and there have been some hiccups, but I agree with you. Props to Gunter for a heck of a bounce back game after what happened against the Cowboys.
Yeah, and Dimitri Goodson talked about this too. I mean, the coaches put them together the night before the game in the team hotel room, had them study. First time he'd ever had a roommate during the regular season. He said they took about 2-3 hours just going through different things, going through different situations. He thought that really helped them, in addition to just a really smart game plan, I thought, by Dom Capers, being able to keep back and utilize Morgan Burnett and HaHa Clinton Dix and Kentrell Bryce a little bit when he was working on the back end as well. So really smart all the way around it. They're going to have to take those same principles and put them towards this game against Atlanta, because certainly, as you alluded to, that's going to be a big challenge with Julio Jones and company.
Yeah, and as you talked about before, you wonder now, the players in this league are good at blocking out the noise and all that, but we all know it. The noise in Atlanta is going to be, are they just headed down the road of another one of these mid-season collapses? They started out, whatever it was, 5-0 or 5-1 last year, and looking like they were heading to the playoffs, and then it all fell apart. And those four consecutive wins they had week 2 through week 5 after a disappointing loss in week 1, they looked like the hottest team on the planet. They looked like Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. These guys, they looked completely unstoppable. And now they've lost back-to-back games at the wire by a total of 5 points. And there's just going to be a lot of questions now surrounding them. Can they win a close game? Are they going to be able to turn it back around again? And there's a lot of really interesting storylines here, both on the Packers side and the Falcons side heading into this one.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, the Green Bay Packers are going to be taking notice of what the Chargers were able to do in that game. Offensively, they want to keep going the way that they're going right now.
No doubt.
And this is going to be an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, we'll throw it to a break and take care of some sponsor business here, though. Wes, we all know that Green Bay fans are the most devoted fans in the league, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious chunky beef with country vegetables. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game, and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we go, since we've been reviewing the Sunday in the NFL, we have to talk at least a little bit about the Seattle-Arizona Sunday night game that goes to overtime at 3-3 and only thanks to a blocked punt by former Badger Tanner McAvoy for the Seattle Seahawks. I believe only the third game in NFL history to go to overtime, tied at 3. And then both teams trade field goals in the first possessions of overtime, so it's 6-6. And then both teams miss chip shot field goals to win the game, and it ends in a 6-6 tie. And you just know that that tie on the ledger for both teams is going to play into the playoff picture in the seeding when it all comes down to it in late December.
Yeah, and I think that's really the biggest takeaway for me from this game is that I don't know everything about how all this, you know, standing stuff goes at the end of the year, but you have to think, especially with the start that Arizona got off to, kind of slow out of the gates, that this could factor heavily into their future. Two teams, though, when you look at their defenses, that I don't want to mess with. I mean, Arizona seems to have kind of figured out where they're at. Seattle's been one of the most consistent units so far this season. And offensively, I think there's a lot that both have to answer for. I mean, you look at Johnson getting 33 carries, 113 yards out of it, only long of 14. I mean, Arizona dedicated themselves to running the ball, but really weren't able to do a whole lot against that Seattle front.
Yeah, this one was all about the defense. Both offensive lines, from what I saw in the game, both offensive lines struggling. The defensive lines, the defensive fronts for both teams were controlling the line of scrimmage. And when that happens, boy, it makes it awfully hard to score points. That being said, the Cardinals had way more opportunities to score points throughout the course of the game and had the first shot to win in overtime on a 24-yard field goal after a delay of game, mind you. But just a crazy game, really, to end the Sunday of the NFL.
And Pete Carroll's facial expressions as that miss from Hauschka goes left, that thing's going to be making its way around the internet for the foreseeable future. That was that kind of jaw gape sort of look.
Wow.
It summed up the entire game, I thought, pretty well for what they went through.
Yeah, another example of you just never know how these games are going to go and how they're going to finish, and that's why we all watch. But we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. At Wes Hodd on Twitter, I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.